Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode number 25.
Got this force coming through in my blood, in my veins. It's a current of love, a chorus of
this week, we have conversations with Lansing Lugnuts pitchers Griffin Murphy and Chase DeYoung. Sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen, and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the 2014 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook. Written by Jay Blue, Charlie Caskey, and Jared McDonald, the handbook is available as an ebook now at smashwords.com for only $7.99 US. We do anticipate availability soon on iTunes and other online retailers, but for now, it's a Smashwords exclusive. You'll get all of what you need to follow the Blue Jays minor league system and the players. We've got team profiles with ticket information, media information, as well as team histories and driving directions. We've also got player profiles of over 250 players in the Blue Jays system. And now to our first conversation on the Blue Jays From Away podcast. First, we talk to Lansing Lugnuts lefty Griffin Murphy, a 2010 second-rounder who is rebounding from a tough season a year ago with a great start to 2014. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm here with Griffin Murphy. Griffin is a left-handed pitcher for the Lansing Lugnuts. Welcome to the podcast, Griffin.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing well, and we're very pleased that you can join us. And we wanted to, first of all, ask you, because last night you had your first appearance of the season, and you went out and you pitched three innings, and you struck out five batters. You really looked very much in command of all your stuff. Can you tell us what you were thinking last night, what you were working on, what you were trying to do?
Well, thanks a lot, but we went out there with a plan against these guys, Quad Cities, that we really wanted to attack with a fastball, and that was the main goal, because once you get ahead of a guy, then you can, you know, toy around with your other pitches. And so for me, it was just getting off 0-1 and maybe even 0-2, and then at that point, then I can go for a strikeout or whatever. And just the kind of the philosophy is get the hitters back in there as quick as possible, let them do the work. And so that's what I tried to go with, and it just kind of worked out.
Now, you're really throwing pretty much all of your off-speed pitches. You had a nice three-inning stint to get out there and get into a good rhythm. Was there anyone that you really were favoring or preferring to throw, or did you just tailor it to suit the situation?
You know, I'm typically a fastball changeup guy, and we like the slider as an out pitch, and the curveball is a good facilitator for all of that. So for me, it was we lead with fastball changeup, and then if we feel like they're getting a hint on that, then we'll work with the other stuff. Or if I feel like I've gone fastball first pitch too many times, maybe dropping a curveball, start with a slider, backdoor slider to a lefty. It all just kind of depends what I want to do. Last night, my slider wasn't exactly where I wanted it, so I kind of tended to stay away from it a little bit and relied more on my curveball as my out pitch. But, you know, having the extra breaking pitches allows you to do that.
Now, we're coming into a fresh season, 2014. Can you tell us a little bit about your 2013 and how you felt about the season as a whole?
You know, people look at the record, and we didn't do that great. Definitely not what people expected. And so it was rough in that sense. You know, it's tough on the fans and the organization as a whole, because you look at that and you got to think, wow, they had a bad year. But from my standpoint, we had a lot of growth from player to player, if you look at it. We kind of had an older bullpen, and I was one of the younger guys, but I learned quite a bit. From that, and being with those older guys, the mental state that you have to be in there. Working with Vince Horsman is an absolute dream. He's, in my opinion, the best pitching coach we have available to us, and he's just a mechanical guru. And that's with me being able to do a full season with him was huge. You know, he's a lefty reliever, I'm a lefty reliever, and we really worked on adding another pitch, which was a slider, picking side to side with all my pitches, you know, being able to throw any pitch on any count. So for me, it wasn't a fantastic season number-wise for me either, But overall, I think I grew a lot as a pitcher.
And are you going to, you know, you must be intending to, you know, apply those lessons this year?
Absolutely. You know, in the offseason, I really worked on it. Me and Vince talked about some things I need to work on in the offseason. I really attacked that. And we've put them to work both in spring training and so far this season. And, you know, baseball, it's a game of constant adjustments. So you just got to make those adjustments and be ready to throw any given day. And for me, that's what we're working towards.
Now, I wouldn't be doing my job here if I didn't ask you about your appearance, which has changed significantly since last year. Can you tell the listeners what's missing?
I had a very Rolly Fingers-esque mustache last year, and I had started that two seasons ago in Bluefield, and it worked for me, you know, as a superstition sort of thing. You know, baseball players tend to be a little more superstitious than the norm. And so I decided to bring it back last year, and I came in, it came in real nice, not to toot my own horn. And somewhere around July, I figured the team kind of needed to shake off the previous half. And so I shaved it, got rid of it, tried to clean up my image a little bit. So that was the big change. So even people here half the time don't recognize me. Different number, no mustache. So they're like, are you his brother or so? But yeah, that's kind of the biggest change so far.
Now, I know a lot of players are really sort of superstitious about their numbers as well. Was that sort of a thing you wanted to shake off your last year by getting a different number?
To be completely honest, I was 255 last year, weight. And so there weren't a ton of options for me as far as jerseys. And I just kind of told them, you know, just give me the biggest jersey. That's fine. And 41 happened to be the biggest jersey. And so when I came in this year, having dropped 25 pounds, I decided, you know, not only do I want to shake off the image of last year, because I could have easily, obviously, fit into 41, but I wanted to start a new stigma of me, you know, being more of a fit guy who's here to play, ready every day, and new year, new number, why not?
Well, there is a Toronto Blue Jays pitcher who very famously wore number 41 and was very successful with it, and that was Pat Henkin.
Oh, yeah, Coach Henkin, man, he's the best. He's one of those guys who just gets it. You know, in baseball we have a term, you know, having feel. And he's one of the guys who just has a lot of feel. And whether you're a big leaguer, minor leaguer, you know, rookie ball guy, he's a guy you can talk to and confide in and ask for some advice. And he's really good with that. So, yeah, Hank, he's one of the guys. He's one of the guys.
Now, speaking of some of the Blue Jays roving coaches, you've obviously Paul Quantrill is here right now, and have you had a chance to speak to him or get any wisdom from him?
Sure, yeah. Q came with us last year. He joined up with us last year, and he came into Lansing, and we had a really nice long conversation about pretty much every aspect of baseball last year. And when I saw him, you know, come in so early this season, I decided I really need to take advantage of that, because he's just a wealth of knowledge. And anybody that's ever met him knows that. And he's very blunt. He's not going to sugarcoat it. And that's what I like. And so he came in this year for day one. You know, we talked about our off season, yada, yada, family stuff, got that out of the way. And then we kind of dug in on the baseball side of it, the mental side of the pitching. And because he's not a pitching coach at any particular level, he doesn't really deal with your mechanics. He doesn't see you enough to go, oh, we got to work on this and this. But just talking to him about the mental side of the game is huge, in my opinion. And for me, it's a guy who will take you to another whole nother level just because your mental game has gotten that much stronger.
So let's talk about the mental game a little bit. I mean, you're saying, you know, he's a guru about the, you know, the mental part of the game, and you talked earlier about the approach you were taking to the hitters. You know, where are you going to go from there?
You know, it's one of the keys, I think, to pitching is, regardless of who's up to bat, whether it's Miguel Cabrera or Joe Schmo, you have to know your approach, know yourself as a pitcher, and I think that's a big part of the game. And you know what Q talks about, Quantrill talks about a lot, is going, you step up there and go, I'm better than this guy. I don't care who he is. My stuff's better. I'm going to beat him on any given day. And being able to take that on the mound is huge, because I was able to walk out there yesterday, and they had two guys. The first guy through, you know, mid-90s, second guy through mid-90s, and I know my fastball's not better. That's fine. But I know I'm going to sink it. I'm going to run it. I'm going to put it in the zone. I'm going to put it at the bottom of the zone. I'm going to be able to back it up with my secondary pitches. And me having that confidence allowed me to go, bang, bang, fastball. All right, now let's have some fun. And for him, that was a big part of it, was being able to just have that confidence within yourself, going, I'm better than you. It doesn't matter who you are. When I step through between those white lines, I am better than you. And that's kind of the bulldog attitude you have to have.
Now, sort of on the same mental lines, I know that Steve Springer is here, and he's very much sort of a mental guru on the other side of the game, on the hitting side. Do you ever talk to somebody like him about, you know, sort of to get intelligence behind the enemy lines about what hitters might be thinking of, or do you sort of just try to focus on what you really feel you need to focus on?
It's funny you mentioned Spring. I grew up listening to Springer's Quality at Bats CD. He's from my area, Southern California, and so I listened to that thing so many times it scratched. I had to get a new one. And so from that, when I saw he was with us, I was excited because I know it doesn't matter your pitcher, catcher, hitter, whatever, he's going to have something to help you with on the mental side. And he even gathered with all the pitchers in spring training, and he talked about how you have to go out there with that confidence, knowing you're better than the batters and knowing that these guys are schmucks and they're trying to guess what we're throwing. And it's funny because right after that he has a meeting with the position players and the hitters going, hey, these baseball players, they're schmucks, they don't know what to throw. And it's funny how he plays both sides against each other, but it's a great thing to have. He's a great asset to have. So anytime I can get myself in a conversation with him, I'm more than glad to.
Well, I don't want to take any more of your time, Griffin, but thanks for joining us. That's Griffin Murphy. He's a left-handed pitcher for the Lansing Lugnuts. And he had a very, very good outing yesterday for his first of the year. 3 shutout innings, I believe 1 hit and 5 strikeouts. So we wish you more outings like that for the rest of the year.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having me.
That was Lansing Lugnuts left-handed pitcher Griffin Murphy. Next, we talk to a right-handed starter who's making a lot of noise after an outstanding 2013. Chase DeYoung was a second-round pick by the Jays in 2012 and has been getting things going over his past few appearances with the Lugnuts after a tough start to this, his first full season in the minor leagues. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm here with Chase DeYoung. Chase is one of the starting pitchers. There's very many starting pitchers here in Lansing, but Chase is one of the starting pitchers of the Lansing Lugnuts. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So why don't we start with not the beginning, but I guess the most recent. You made your first start of the year last week. I believe it was in Lake County. So what can you tell us about that start?
Well, it wasn't my best. Let's just get that on the table right now. You know, it was fun to play there. Lake County is a nice stadium. Had family in town. It was really fun to play in front of them. Wish I could have done a little bit better. You know, I talked with George and Vince Horseman, the pitching coach, and Paul Quantrill and stuff, but just processing the game. And, you know, I didn't really execute my game plan that well. Well, I did execute my game plan, but I didn't have a good game plan to start with. So we wanted to stay fastball changeups most of the game. We did that. We were cruising through 2 innings pretty well doing that. But I don't know if people on your podcast have seen me pitch, but with me, I'm a four-seam curveball changeup guy. And if I have my four-seam and my curveball working, they play off each other very well. And when I do that, I can get away with the fastball elevated because they come off the same plane. Well, I threw 3 curveballs in 70 pitches, so I wasn't getting away with the fastball up. I was getting hit hard, really hard when I did it. So that's just something. I mean, hey, first outing of the year, you got to be able to adapt and, you know, execute a quality game plan. So obviously the next time through, I mean, I'm not good enough yet to where I can just say, you know, I'm just going to throw fastball changeups the first time through the lineup. I need to execute my pitches and execute them well and down where, you know what, Lake County, I was up, and I got hurt for it. But, you know, it's a lot easier to learn from a mistake that actually hurts you than to get by on bad pitches and be like, yeah, you know, I'll just get it down next time. Sometimes it takes a 3-run home run to make you realize, hey, I got to get the ball to the knees.
And is that something where it's a deliberate effort that you want to do? Because, I mean, while our listeners may not have seen you pitch, they've definitely heard me or read what I've written about, you know, seeing your curveball and when I saw you pitch in Bluefield last year. And I think many people who have seen you pitch would say that it's probably your out pitch and probably one of the best things you throw.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, just because, you know, if you look at it, the game has kind of transitioned into a power game where you got guys that throw 94 to 97, and you know, I'm not that guy. I'm a low 90s. I mean, I'll touch a 94 every now and then, but I'm a low 90s guy. I got good tilt, but I have the 12-6 curveball that not a lot of people throw anymore. And I mean, it's definitely my out pitch. I mean, my changeup has come along a long way since high school. In Bluefield last year, me and Tony worked on it a lot, and it has developed into a quality third pitch for me. But I mean, any scouting report you'll ever see on me says, "Hey, he's got a good curveball."
Right, and that's Tony Caceres, the pitching coach in the Bluefield Blue Jays. He's returning this year. Well, let's talk about that changeup a little bit, because, you know, is it a conscious effort that's going on right now that you want to work on that changeup and improve it, because maybe the curveball is more advanced?
Absolutely. You know, every year you got to try to get better with it. And for me, I mean, I'm a three-pitch guy. I throw three pitches for strikes, and now I have the confidence in every single one of them to throw it at any count. So just to have that advanced feel for my curveball, and, you know, I think I am getting that advanced feel for my changeup where I can throw it. And 2-0, 2-1, 3-1, whatever. I mean, if you're going to roll over on it and I need a double play, I mean, it's definitely one of my options.
Now, have you found already, again, you've only had one appearance, but I'm sure you've thrown in the bullpen, is it a little bit different pitching in the cold weather? Is there a different feel on the ball? Different, you know, you stay warm a little bit differently?
You know, coming into this, being from Southern California, I've never really had to pitch in the cold weather before. It didn't affect me as much as I thought it would, because your body does stay warm. I mean, with all the cold gear that's out there that's being, I mean, mass produced, you do stay warm. Your body doesn't, like, tense up. So you still stay nice and loose. The one thing is that, you know, you don't have as good a grip on the ball for some reason. And, you know, but there's all different kind of tricks and stuff. And, you know, the umpires are very, willing to let you, you know, bend the rules a bit more where, you know, you can go to your mouth. And, I mean, because they understand they're cold too. Everybody's standing out there. But, you know, when it comes down to it, everybody's cold. It's not like just the mound's cold or just defense is cold. Everybody is. To be honest, I would say the pitcher is probably the warmest guy on the field, just because we're always moving. Where, you know what, hey, if I'm cold and this guy's fouling me off, and say I got a guy in first, I'll pick over 3-4 times in a row just to make sure that guy's got to stand still and maybe freeze up a little bit. But I'm still throwing and staying hot. So there's definitely tricks and things you can do to stay warm, you know, and going to spring training and talking with guys that have been at the colder levels, just picking their brains about stuff, and, you know, just blowing your hand warmers, staying warm in the dugout. With two outs, I would get up and start moving again, just kind of get out there and use all your warm-up pitches, just get hot. And it's really not as much of a obstacle as I thought it was going to be, but it definitely is there.
Now, why don't we talk a little bit about Lansing itself? It's a new city for you. You said you've got some relatives in, you know, the Lake County area, the Cleveland area. So are you familiar with the Midwest, and are you familiar with Michigan a little bit?
I am, actually. My dad grew up in northwest Iowa, so I have very fond memories of the Midwest, where every single summer my family would get in the Suburban, me and my two brothers and my mom and my dad, and we'd drive from Los Angeles to northwest Iowa. And I spent pretty much every single summer until baseball got really serious around like the age of 14 and 15 in the Midwest. And my dad's got cousins out here. My mom has 31 first cousins, all from either like West Virginia or Ohio, and they're just scattered all down, up and down the East Coast. So I have family in Florida when we go to spring training, and I think I have family in almost every city in this league. So it's definitely fun, you know, just to be able to leave tickets and have people in the ballpark every night.
So it's the DeYoung family entourage.
More or less, yeah. My mom is one of the most well-connected people in the world. I swear, it's crazy that, I mean, she's been here for, I think, 2 weeks, and I think she stayed in one hotel just because we know that many people. So it's definitely a blessing to have all this friends and family around.
Now, could we go back a little bit to, you know, you said you got serious about baseball around 14, 15. There are a lot of players who get serious about baseball really early on, and that's all they play and that's all they do. Were you playing other sports too? And when you played baseball when you were younger, were there other positions that you played that really you enjoyed playing as well as pitching?
You know, I really did. I actually started a lot later than most people did. I started at 10 was my first year, other than like T-ball at 5. But I played basketball because my family's a basketball family. To be honest, out of the 5 young grandsons, Jordan played baseball, his younger brother Anthony played baseball, and I played baseball. So it was just the 3 of us, and Jordan pitched for the Blue Jays and I pitched for the Blue Jays. So it's pretty cool for that. But we're a basketball family. And I got taken to a tryout when I was 10 years old, and I fell in love, you know, just the whole game. But I was athletic enough to play. I had the tools, but I just didn't know baseball. And it's actually pretty funny that the first way that I learned situational baseball was my 10-year-old coach. When I was 10 years old, my coach, he told me to get an Xbox and get a video game, and that's how I learned situational defenses and like the ins and outs of baseball. Was okay, this is the cutoff man and this is this, by playing video games. And it's funny because now I can't stand playing video games. I'd rather be outside.
That's a great story. And I did want to ask, you know, there were two things in there. The first one was, you know, with Jordan having been playing for the Blue Jays, and when you were drafted by the Blue Jays, was there, you know, any sort of connection? Did they tell you, or did he tell you anything about the organization after you'd been drafted? And had the Blue Jays contacted you? Were you scouted by them heavily? Did you have a feeling that they would be the ones to take you?
The Blue Jays were definitely one of the top teams that were scouting me. I was in contact with, I think, 29 of the 30. And, you know, the Blue Jays scout in my area, his name is Joe Aversa, great guy. I mean, we're still very close. Even if the Jays didn't get me, I mean, we're really close. Like, he came over for Christmas, and, I mean, I'm like an older brother to his kids. But just, yeah, June 5th, second round comes around, and the Jays call my name. And that night, Jordan calls me, and he said, hey, like, you just need to know, like, you did this. Like, I didn't call any favors. I didn't do anything. But they like you and you're good. And he said, and the other thing is that it's a top-notch organization. They're going to treat you well and you're going to really enjoy playing for them. And it's kind of fun because, like, when I show up, there's a few people that actually know how to say my last name right. And I'm like, you must be here for a little while. He goes, yeah, I had your cousin. And it's a really cool experience because, I mean, not many people get to do what we're doing right now. And to have two grandsons, or to have two of the 5 grandsons play professional baseball and to play for the same team, I mean, those odds have got to be way up there. So it's really cool, and he and I are always going to have this special kind of bond because of it.
Now, have you picked his brain at all about just, you know, pitching, about, you know, professional baseball? Has he been a source of information for you?
Definitely. You know, He's definitely been there for me when I had pitching questions to ask and all that kind of stuff. Even when I was a little kid, I mean, I remember being a field rat over at Cal State Fullerton watching him play. And then I remember being in Tampa when he pitched against the Yankees, and that was when Randy Johnson just got assigned to them. And I saw him on a rehab stint or a spring training start, and that was really cool just to be able to see my cousin pitch against him. But, yeah, Jordan's definitely been there. He's definitely been a resource. He's definitely let some of the guys that he's played with know that I'm there, where, like, Ricky Romero knows me because of Jordan. Dustin McGowan and my cousin are really close. Sergio Santos, Eric Kratz, I met him for the first time in spring training. He came over, he said, hey, me and Jordy were roomies on the road one year in, like, Syracuse or something. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Just, it's really a blessing to have him leave such a great legacy behind in the Blue Jays organization, that it's really easy for me to be who I am, where, I mean, if he didn't leave a good legacy, it could have lasting effects, but it doesn't, and it's a great organization to play for, and I'm glad they've got two DeYoungs in their system, or had to.
All right, I won't take up too much more of your time, but what are your goals for this season? Like, do you have any specific things in your mind that you want to achieve, or you want to work on, or you want to improve at?
You know, I know that last year, I know the Jays do take it slow with pitching prospects or even just in high school guys in general. So with the whole sending me to Bluefield in Vancouver last year thing, obviously, you know, you wanted to break a camp with a full season team because all the guys that got drafted around me, above me, and some behind me, they were up in this league last year, the Sally League, and I'm like, man, what the heck? But just being able to trust in the process that they have for me, I know that being here, I need to make all my starts for 140-something games or whatever we have. The 30 starts I'm going to get, I need to be healthy and I need to be able to answer the bell every fifth day. So that's definitely number one goal. And then the other stuff just comes along with it, just because you make 30 starts, you're going to get the reps. And to have the repetition, you're going to execute your pitches better and on a more quality level to where, because that's the difference between here and the big leagues is that, I mean, we have the same stuff. We got guys that throw 100 miles an hour, but up there, they do it consistently. They do it every night. They do it every fifth day. I mean, it's the difference between here and there is consistency. So the way you build that is you get more reps, you get more consistent at it, you move up the ladder. You don't, you go home. So.
Well, actually, you did remind me that you did pitch in Vancouver last year. So I do want to ask you what you thought of Vancouver and what was it like getting up there and pitching in that kind of environment.
Unbelievable. First time in Canada. That was really cool. There were a little bit of differences, but, I mean, it wasn't like a whole different world up there. It was really fun, great atmosphere. I had a really good host family. I only threw one inning. I threw one inning in Everett, but the Canadians fans travel really well. So that was, I still got a little bit of that 10th man feel down in Everett. But just to be able to win on our home turf up there was, it was breathtaking. It was everything you could ever wanted. I mean, that's how baseball is supposed to be played. To have that kind of atmosphere, that kind of fan base, that kind of loyalty. It was just unbelievable to be able to play there.
Well, I'll leave you with that. That's Chase DeYoung. He's a pitcher for the Lansing Lugnuts, and he was definitely enjoying his first trip to Canada and his pitching experience with the Vancouver Canadiens. Thanks a lot, Chase.
Yeah, thank you.
That's it for episode number 25 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Griffin Murphy and Chase DeYoung of the Lansing Lugnuts. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, @JaysFromAway. Come on back next week and go Jays go.